The SEND Network podcast is brought to you by the SEND Network, a digital community for SEND practitioners to connect and collaborate. To find out more, head over to thesend-network.co.uk. Hello and welcome to the SEND Network podcast. In this episode, we are talking about how to have a broad impact as a SENCO with Gary Orban. Gary is a lead SENCO at a multi-academy trust, a content specialist for the Education Endowment Foundation, as well as the author of The Lone SENCO and the SEND Matters blog. Gary, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure, India. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to be exploring the three ways in which SENCOs can maximise their impact, focusing on how to practically achieve these things within a setting and which areas to focus on in particular. But before we get into your three suggestions, I wanted to start by asking you, why is it that SENCOs struggle to have such a broad impact? And in your experience, what are the main barriers that stand in the way of this happening?
Thanks, India. I mean, the SENCO role is so hard, isn't it? And I don't know any SENCO who says to me, oh, it's getting a bit easier at the moment, actually. It seems that the context of schools, and you know, my job is working very closely with 10 schools in particular, as well as some others. I find it really hard in the current context of pupils and their needs and post-COVID, perhaps, and with limited budgets, certainly. It's just really hard context at the moment. So there are lots of things that stand in the way. And I think there are some, you know, every SENCO I work with is passionate, committed, has levels of expertise that they continue to develop, but has, you know, real skill and knowledge. But it's actually what we tend to, you know, what we do with that. And actually, too often we don't talk about impact, or impact's a real afterthought of, you know, that's. Let's see. Oh, yes, they have done a bit better in the reading, so that's great. But actually, this, you know, I wrote this book, The Lone SENCO, because too often the SENCO is working alone. And when I started as a SENCO of quite a big secondary school in central London, I just went firstly to the things that I could control. So I was like, well, I'm land managing the teaching assistant, so let's focus on their practice. And I've got some interventions in this cupboard, so they're within reach. So let me do that. And where I need to fill in forms, I can do that at my laptop. So let's do that. But actually, what I didn't focus on was the things that had a broad impact. So if I think there are, it's not, you know, if we think about whole school SEND provision, it's not for me to do everything. People talk about a SEND co, not a SEND do. It's about that coordination role. So actually, it's about me expecting that the teaching in geography is great. That's not for me to become an expert geography teacher and support those teachers how to do that necessarily. There's a head of geography who can do that, but I might need to support them, and I certainly need to engage with them. So it's choosing those tasks and things that are going to have impact that is larger than yourself, larger than just the one child you're working with or the one TA you're supporting.
That segues really nicely into my first question, actually, about prioritising impactful tasks, because how do we measure impact? Who should it ultimately be impactful for? And is there an issue when it comes to quantifying impact?
Yeah, I think impact's really tricky, because a bit of intervention we might do for just one child might be totally transformative and keep them coming to school and help the family feel there is some hope. And that might be just for one child, but it might be in a way that's hard to measure, just as important as getting an intervention set up for 50 pupils. So I don't mean to suggest that impact's really easy, but a task I sometimes do with SENCOs is I list sort of 7 or 8 things that SENCOs might do across a week. And I'll say, can you rank these from most impact to least? So knowing that, you know, everything's going to have impact on some level, but I put on this list things like monitoring the work of one teaching assistant, mentoring a child in year 10, doing a learning walk across a department or across the school and giving some feedback, completing exam access arrangements, paperwork, phoning a family about a detention that a child's got. You know, I put all these things that they're all going to have impact on some level. But I ask SENCOs to rank their most impact to the least. And then I say to them, so presumably you are spending most of your time doing the tasks that have the greatest impact. And then I sort of get death stares, or I get looked at and sort of, no, that's totally totally far from how I spend my working week. So actually, a lot of Senkos say to me, and it's my experience as well, that you spend too much time doing things that don't have enough impact. So for example, it may be that we have to fill out very, very lengthy forms to external providers of services, or as part of an EHD needs assessment, or as part of exam access arrangements applications. And some of those things will be useful. Some of those things will be essential, but are they worth the time we put into them? I'm not so sure. Where we have annual review processes that are incredibly lengthy, you know, and annual reviews are really important for pupils and their families with EHCPs, or they should be. And we need to make sure that families are heard, that the pupil is heard, and that we sort of put a line in the sand about where they are, what support they're getting, and what might need to change. But I'm not sure they're worth us spending, you know, half a day preparing all the paperwork for them and half a day writing them up. I mean, maybe they are, but if with anything, we can make an argument for doing it. But we also need to be aware of what the cost is in terms of, I haven't been out and about in classrooms, in corridors, and working closely with families, with children, working with a range of leaders and teachers across the school in order to get that whole school provision where we all are invested in and doing well for our pupils with SEND. So it's not that I'm arguing that any of these things on their own don't have impact, but of course there's a cost when it means that we can't do other things.
So as you said, ranking is a really good way of actually visualising that and just getting that on paper, literally, to see, to try and measure the impact of tasks. So you mentioned leadership there. Does a lot of this come down to having that representation in leadership and them actually appreciating what the challenges are on the ground, instead of kind of, as you described, it's a lot of paperwork and bureaucracy and ticking boxes, but actually impact is felt and not ticked?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And it's and that depends on the work of leaders across the school. I totally agree with you. So when we're looking initially at which tasks have impact, what I'd sometimes ask, you know, work with Senkos on is, what do you do that takes loads of time and has very little impact? Because that's not going to get us very far. It's not going to drive outcomes. It might get our email count lower and red emails lower. It might get some forms off to different people, but actually takes lots of time, doesn't always have impact. So what do we do about those things? It could be that we keep doing those things in the same way. We keep getting to Friday afternoon and going, actually, I've got lots done this week, but none of it's had much positive impact on these pupils. So we keep doing things in the same way. Or it could be that we go, actually, how can I structure my department? So the things that do need to be done, actually, I can get someone else, I can use, you know, the expertise of someone else to be able to do that thing, fill in that form or phone back that person so that I can do the sort of strategic leadership things as a Senko. It could be that we do something less well. If we're a perfectionist, actually, it could be we're trying to fill in the best annual review paperwork that no one may read anyway. Ever, or a cube that we're trying to win gold medals for our exam access arrangements paperwork, where we don't actually need to put five paragraphs where one would do. So I think it's about looking at those tasks and going, what is, you know, what deserves my time? What deserves a bit less time? And where do I need to push back? If I'm told, well, there's a form for this, and we can just say, look, you've already got this information. Sometimes it is about, it's about pushing back. But your question was about leadership. And I really think that for Senkos, we get sometimes lost in the debate about whether a Senko is on SLT or not. And clearly, representation for and advocacy for those pupils with SEND at an SLT level is really essential. Whether that's done by the Senko or through a different member of SLT who can do that really well and work very closely with the Senko, I think there isn't one, it's not one size fits all in that regard. So I was a Senko, it was my first sort of, my biggest leadership role at the time. And if you put me on SLT at the same time, then that would have been quite overwhelming for me. I think I was able to lean very closely on the deputy head I worked closely with, who'd been my advocate at SLT. But actually, putting me on SLT, I don't think would have been the answer. But of course, it's about how does that Senko support every leader to do their job? So I really, that's about working through others.
This actually leads very nicely onto your second strategy that you shared with us, which is supporting the leadership of others. And in a recent blog post, you actually spoke about colleague facing colleague facingness. So I just wondered if you could expand a little bit on that and what that means.
Yeah, so when I walk into a classroom on a learning walk, or when Senkos and colleagues do, where they go into the classroom and where do they look? I wonder if they look at one child who hasn't picked their pen up and they go and talk to that child about picking up their pen, and then they're better placed to get on with the learning. I wonder if they look at what the teacher's doing and whether they're going, actually, I need to pick up on what this teacher is doing really well so I can praise, help them to feel confident in how they meet the needs, and also perhaps give some feedback about, how they could develop their practice. Am I looking even sort of wider than that in terms of leadership? Am I looking at the curriculum that they're trying to deliver and thinking about where it might be tricky for those pupils and what the leader of that subject area might be looking to do? Am I looking at the teaching approaches that all teachers are being asked to do in their teaching in a particular school, and then thinking, okay, actually, there's a teaching and learning sort of messaging thing or training aspect that we need to work at the most senior level? So actually, if I talk about colleague facing, it's firstly not thinking it's just me and the kids. And whenever there's a child with SEND and it's not quite going well in the classroom, that's for me to fix through speaking to that child or doing something with my team. It's actually going, if every teacher is a teacher of SEND and every leader is a leader of SEND, that doesn't mean it's easy, but it means it's everyone's responsibility. What I get a bit sick of is us sort of saying, every teacher's a teacher of SEND, every leader's a leader of SEND, off you go, and we close the door and hope they can get on with it. Clearly we need to provide the support and sometimes training, sometimes encouragement, sometimes monitoring in order to make that a reality. But ultimately, I talked about the geography lesson before. It is not a Senko's job necessarily to get 1 year, five class when they're learning geography to be able to do it more successfully, but it will be someone else's job, and they might need support and they might need us to do things in tandem. But actually, it's only by a Senko being colleague facing that happens. So what I encourage Senkos to do is, once they're particularly, if they need, you can't always do it with every colleague, but if they know what their priorities are for development, they should then be thinking, who are the colleagues who have overlapping responsibility within this area? So if I am at Key Stage 2, if I'm thinking about Key Stage 2 and there's lots of pupils who are quite dysregulated and struggle with that learning environment, they struggle to sort of stay focused on tasks and stay in their chair or whatever that might look like. Actually, that's not just a Senko job, is it? There may be a head of phase, and it's in that head of phase, head of Key Stage 2's interest for all pupils to be calm and regulated. So what kind of work do we need to do together? So I'm going to ask, firstly, in that example of a head of Key Stage 2, a head of geography, whatever the leader is, what are they responsible for? And I'm going to think, okay, they're responsible for outcomes in geography, for the behavior of pupils in Key Stage 2, for for handwriting, whatever it might be, for the lunch, for who's on duty at lunch. Yeah. What are they responsible for? And then what does excellence look like? So excellence might look like lots of pupils make good progress academically in Key Stage 2, or lots of pupils choose geography for GCSE, or lots of pupils at lunchtime are calm and doing sort of purposeful activity with peers, whatever it might be. If there's a careers and enrichment lead, that person's responsible for making sure that pupils have positive and enriching experiences that are extracurricular. What are they responsible for? What does excellence look like? And then how can I develop their practice? So I'm not just going to close the door and say, every leader is a leader, send off you go. But I'm going to support that person to think, this is probably why it's not quite working for these pupils. Let's do a piece of work together that helps to address this. If you're working with a head of year, if there's a head of year seven, they are not head of year seven for 85% of their year group and the Senko has the rest, they're head of year. But actually, it may be that some of those pupils with SEND are making, some of those pupils make that job a bit trickier through no fault of those pupils. And actually, the Senko doesn't need to become that head of year, but they need to work through others, need to upskill that pastoral member of staff or the whole pastoral team around when they pick up a child who's autistic, who's dysregulated. How are they going to manage that interaction? When they're phoning back a parent of a child who's got sort of emotionally based school avoidance, how are they going to manage that conversation so that that can go well and they can understand the difficulties that child's having? So, about working through others.
So on the ground then, this colleague-facing way of working, is that meetings, is that getting people in the same room, is that discussing the children that everyone has an interest in doing well?
Yeah, I think it's being as systematic as you can. And I know that this leads on to my sort of third point here, India, around around developing effective Sen systems. So if I wait until things aren't working very well in, I don't want to pick on geography, poor geographers, but if I wait until things aren't working very well, or pupils didn't pick the subject to GCSE, or outcomes halfway through year 11, we're predicting doing predicted grades and they look a bit ropey, whatever those sort of, you know, things are that help me realize that things aren't great, I can just wait for the bad news, or I can get ahead of it through working systematically. So if we're looking at academic outcomes, and clearly there's lots more to school than just academic outcomes, but they're pretty key, aren't they? Actually, if I have a system whereby I spend, you know, an hour every half term with every middle leader in the school, and it could be that we, you know, I might do different things with each of those middle leaders. We'd sort of agree what the most useful thing to do is. It might be we sit and have a discussion about how it's going and what the grades are looking like and about those individual people's needs. It could be that we go and look at some curriculum documents together and work out why these pupils, when it gets to the harder levels, the harder sort of content, are struggling there. And it may well be that we go and look in classrooms and look in some books and that kind of thing. And then there's a sort of shared action plan that comes from it around, I'm going to come along to your head of your geography department meeting and do a bit of training on this. And actually, as a head of department, maybe you could monitor the implementation of, you know, this type of way of teaching vocabulary to make sure it's happening day in, day out. So, but my point is that happens through developing systems, doesn't it? We don't wait till everything's going terribly. We don't just go to those who are the most interested in engaging with the Senko, but we develop a system, we get it agreed and make sure it's known that there's an expectation that every middle leader spends an hour in the company of the Senko and you know, works out what they're going to do, what's going to happen to bring Sen provision forward as a result. And then that happens systematically. So this is really my final point, Indira, is about developing effective Sen systems. And I think that works for quite a broad range of things, really. So I worked with my Senkos recently and said, if you had, you know, if you could magic a few hours every week, what would be those things that you say, I want to do this, you know, I'm going to make sure I do this every day, every week, every half term, every term, or annually. And so things they come up with are things like, we think initial teacher trainees, people who are trained to be teachers, deserve to be visited by the Senko or someone in a similar role, half-termly, let's say, and given some face-to-face feedback. So that would be lovely. And clearly, you know, I don't pretend that any Senkos have time to burn. It's partly about going, what am I doing? What am I doing with my week? It doesn't have enough impact. And how can I not do those things? So it links to what we were saying already. Yeah. But actually, what would I love to do? See every trainee teacher every half term, maybe see every ECT every term. Maybe I'll do that alongside the head of department. So it's not that I then have a long list of things to do, but that's sort of more for their direct line manager. In terms of attendance, some of the Senkos I work with are saying, well, actually every day, I really want to know who's not here. And so let's not, if we've got an attendance officer in our school or if the class teacher phones the parent or whatever it is, the receptionist, actually, I need to know a Senko who's not here, because they might get, you know, that parent might get a call at 9 o'clock. Where's the child? Oh, they're off sick. All right, thanks, bye. But actually, they might really benefit from that phone call from the Senko phoning them at 3:30, going, just checking you're okay for tomorrow. Any worries, any concerns about what you might have missed? Or do you want to come and see me first thing in the morning and we'll just get you settled? And actually, but that happens through a system, doesn't it? If we just go, whenever I find a spare minute, I'm going to try and go and check the registers for today. Well, that'll happen a couple of days, but more often than not, things will get in the way. But if we set up a system where someone from the office sends us a list of the, you know, pupils that day on the SEN register who've not made it in and the reason they're not in, and then I always spend the last, you know, 10 minutes of lunch or straight after school or whatever doing that, or better still, I know that as a Senko, I might get pulled in 100 different directions, but I might know there's someone else in my department who's less likely to get pulled. I can protect their time a bit more, and they're going to do that. It might be that on a Friday at 2 o'clock, I have a free period, and I always sit down and look at, you know, the attendance for that previous week, and I make myself a list of jobs for Monday morning that are about, you know, either phoning people in, meeting with parents, whatever that might be. But it happens through making a system that means on Friday at 2 o'clock, I always check the week's attendance, for example.
And a lot of it, as you've touched on, is also making relationships and with other stakeholders in this. And I think that, you know, as we said, these points are all very, very interlinked, but it's finding the other key members of this chain and building up the system. So it is a, as we say, it's a whole school approach. Yeah. How big at the moment is the ambition gap between the ideal Sen system and really what's going on on the ground in your experience?
I think one of the the main issues around Sen provision nationally is the amount of inconsistency and the amount of variance, and the sort of partly some schools do it really well and others don't do it so well, and there's not enough collaborative working to sort of right that wrong. Partly some schools abdicate their responsibility a bit and got the school up the road, they're really good with Send and we don't really do Send. You know, I think there's no accountability in the system to stop that happening particularly. Obviously, parents can, when the child has an EHCP, you know, essentially choose the school they want to go to. If you show around a school and the head says, oh, we're not very good, we won't do a very good job with your child, then actually that choice is likely to be taken away because the parent's not going to offer the second best or, you know, to their child. So I think, and obviously the with the Send review and the green paper and the improvement plan, you know, there's sort of, you know, there are ways that have been articulated to make it a bit less uneven nationally and even regionally and even from the school up the road that I hope really help. But there's not enough incentives for schools to be inclusive at the moment, are there? There's a strong moral incentive, but actually, you know, for a school who's very inclusive, is that going to affect their grades and the amount of pupils at age-related expectations? Is it going to affect the amount of funding they have? Because inevitably, it will cost them a bit more to employ that person to support that child than they're going to get from the local authority in most cases. So, not enough incentives. And I hope that the way forward is to support that a little bit.
Yeah, and we spoke in the beginning of the episode about barriers, but actually, what do you see for, you know, breaking, hopefully, as we've been talking a lot of ways of how to break down those barriers, what are the positive impact that can come from that? Because I always think it's nice to end on something positive. Yeah. So in your experience, have you seen ways that really work and things that are really impactful for children that you're working with?
Yeah, I think the thing that fills me with hope and optimism is that I've never met a teacher or TA or leader who doesn't want it to work for pupils. Even when people are saying things that might suggest the opposite, I think people only ever do that because they have an insecurity about being able to do it well. And if there is a particular child whose needs mean that your lesson isn't quite going as successfully as it otherwise would, then some people in the stress and busyness of teaching or working in schools, express things in a poor way around they can't come to my class or I'm not in a special school. You meet some attitudes that aren't great, but it's never, ever, ever in my experience because people don't want school to work for all pupils. It's because there's a bit of a training gap and or because people don't feel supported and or because people don't always accept that sometimes it does go a bit wrong. And actually for pupils with Send in particular, sometimes a pupil might have a bad day or a bad lesson or a bad minute or make you feel like you're not doing a great job as a teacher or as a leader. And we need to be the ones just to go, every day is afresh. I'm going to be reflective. I'm not going to take it personally. I'm going to access support where I need it. And I'm going to, tomorrow's a new day.
Mm.
But there's plenty of, you know, I see green shoots in many of the commitment from school staff at the moment. When I must have asked about 1,000 people in the last year, does it feel a bit trickier? Does it feel like there are more pupils to send at the moment in your school and that those pupils have more complex needs than they did historically? And, you know, I haven't met a single person who disagreed with that. You know, it feels more at the moment. And the census data suggests that is the case in reality, up to 4% EHCPs compared to 2.6 three or four years ago. Yeah. So that suggests that is the reality as well. But I never meet adults in school who don't want pupils to send to do well. The final thing I say on that, India, sorry, is that that the evidence from the EEF, which I've talked about, you know, in my work with the EEF, suggests that it doesn't take, we don't need everyone to have a master's in SEND or an educational psychologist level of training in order to meet the needs of pupils. That the evidence suggests that there are lots of things that we can do for all pupils that will be broadly beneficial for all of them, but will be particularly useful for some in terms of the clarity of our expression, the scaffolds we build into our learning and the way we group our pupils and the way we might embed technology, the way we might help tricky content to really stick in a pupil's long-term memory. These are things that are going to be broadly useful for all, particularly useful for some. And it's not that they become magic wand answers. They still need to be applied cleverly and with nuance and with reflection and with a bit of support and guidance. But actually, it's not that our school staff have to learn a different language. By and large, for pupils, in order to meet the needs of pupils who send, they need to think about that language of teaching and learning that they already are really well versed in, and then think about the nuance, reflect on their practice, and get support where needed in order to make that work.
I think that's such a nice point to end on, that the hope is really in the individual motivation of the Senko, which is what we see time and time again, speaking to so many different people on the network. I should mention to listeners that we do have a dedicated room for the podcast on the Send Network. So I'm sure there are questions and comments from this conversation. So if you want to head over to the network, you can post your comments on there. And I know, Gary, you are a member of the Send Network. Yeah. So perhaps you, if you do have a minute at some point, which I know is few and far between at the moment, but potentially reply to a few and keep the conversation going. But for now, Gary, thank you so much for joining me today.
That's a real pleasure, India. Thank you very much for having me, and I hope people have found the episode useful.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Send Network podcast, please rate, review and subscribe. And for more information, head over to thesend-network.co.uk.